Welcome, everyone, to our podcast, You Can't Eat the Sunshine. This is episode 134, and it is for the week of April 20th, 2020. We are 31 days into Mayor Eric Garcetti's Safer at Home Directive, and you are listening to our newly formatted podcast. So I would like my wife, my love, and my co-host, Kim Cooper, to please continue bringing us into focus.
Yeah, I want to welcome you to the new version of You Can't Eat the Sunshine, recording semi-live from quarantined Los Angeles, bringing preservation people together to talk about this incredibly odd circumstance in which we find ourselves, where we have all kinds of things we want to do all around the town to make Los Angeles better, and yet we're not allowed to leave the house. And yet, we're still very, very busy, very active, very creative, and causing lots of trouble, so we might as well share that with you.
Perfect. Okay, now we're going to get to our guests and our topic. Our topic today is a discussion about a proposed development on the 700 block of South Normandy. And our guests are all germane, relevant, and very much in the thick of a preservation battle around this proposed development. So our first guest, I will let him properly introduce himself. Our first guest is Nathan Marsak. Nathan, introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. My name is Nathan Marsak. I'm a local architectural historian, preservationist, rake, and raconteur. Here to tell you a little something about 700 Block of South Normandy today.
Perfect. And Nathan, you are the cranky preservationist. That is one of your many personalities that my wife has helped create for you, and one of your more recent posts was about this block, so we'll include that in the link section. Stephen Luffman, you are a dear friend, you're a great preservationist and community activist, and I want you to tell us about your work in this development discussion, CEQA crisis on the 700 block of South Normandy.
So there's two great preservationists who live right on that block, Carolyn and Spencer, who are long-term residents of the Koreatown area and live right on this historic block, which is a state historic district. It's the Normandy Mariposa Historic District, and they founded the Save Normandy Mariposa Historic District group. And have been lobbying to try to improve a infill project that so it fits in. It doesn't stick out like a sore finger in the middle of this fist. And they really have done an amazing job. And this is, I'll hand it over to Carolyn and Spencer.
Perfect, Stephen. That was fantastic. Carolyn Zanelli. Spencer Jones, please introduce yourselves, the two of you, and what it is that is across the street right outside your window that you have been fighting so hard and so well for.
Well, currently...
Tell us your name, my dear.
Oh, I'm Carolyn Zanelli. I live on this special street of Normandy between 7th and 8th Street. It's our little New York right here in the center of Los Angeles. It's funny because Stephen mentioned that of how we almost, probably by a week, the little eyesore that they were about to build in the empty lot right next door to us, right across the street from us, we can look at it from our window. They were about to build a horrible eyesore, and the only reason we found out about it is because there was a little 8x11. Like the size of a headshot notification that they were planning to build and that the letter of determination had been received and was out in the past and the time to do anything about it was over. And this was the first time that as residents of the street that anyone would have known of this. And it was just by chance, right on the parking lot rail gate, that we found this, and we had about 8 days to get into what Stephen had referred to as a CEQA appeal to stop or halt this project, and it gave us the opportunity to do what we're doing right now and to remind people why CEQ was supposed to be there. And this is a historic district, and we can't just build anything on it, which they were about to.
Perfect. Spencer, we do not want to forget about you. We want to get your voice here in the intro, so we recognize it as we get deep into the weeds and deep into the end of the pool about this challenge. So introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi, everyone. My name is Spencer Jones. Like I said, like you introduced me, thanks for putting this together, first of all. Yeah, a longtime resident of Koreatown, Los Angeles in general, but I would just basically say that, you know, this is a great thing that we're fighting for. Our heart is in Koreatown. We think it's a very important historical part of the city. There's so much history in this. The texture of this area is indeed rich and deep, with lots of cool stories, lots of interesting buildings, and this street in particular. You know, based off the homework that Nathan did, was so striking. And when we moved in, we just fell in love with the street. So. We just hope that the city sees it that way as well. And I'm glad that there are people in Los Angeles that are raising awareness, because there's definitely, I think, interest from the citizens of LA listening to a podcast like this to know about the fabric of the city that we live in, right? I mean, like, if this was in Chicago or if this was in New York, all of this sort of conservationist infrastructure has been so set in place for so long. And I really feel like we're at the dawn of a new era in Los Angeles, and that our appreciation has started to become more and more organized. We have more outlets for this type of awareness, and we're trying to apply pressure to our councilman's office and take the fight to them. So happy to be here.
Perfect. Okay, Kim, hold on just 1 second. You're good. Okay, good. So Kim, please, we're gonna go back and we're gonna circle around again, getting into the heart of this issue. There is, of course, a clear deliverable / milestone to this, which we'll get to in a minute. Kim, what is it you would like to do to set us up for the broader context of this conversation on April 20th, 2020?
Well, what is so important in this project is that You guys are not saying, oh, we don't want anything built on our block. We don't want another dense apartment building. You're actually making a very nimble and important argument. You're saying this block is architecturally distinctive, and it's not appropriate to just put up another one of these cheap, interchangeable, modern blobs. Obviously, developers could care less. They've got multiple projects in the works at any given time. This developer, Jameson, is one of the biggest in the neighborhood, and they even have projects that are in various stages of completion that they leave from time to time because they have various funding issues that are complicated. So for them to come to your block, they're like, oh, great, we're just going to do the densest thing we can, and the city's going to sign off on it because nobody cares. Your response is, no, we do care. We care about what this looks like, and we want something that actually, you know, fits in, that makes the block more beautiful or as beautiful as it already is, and doesn't spoil something that isn't just a wonderful place for you to live, but is also a huge revenue generator for the city. It's one of the biggest filming locations in the city. So I found that interesting when I was first sharing the links to the video that Nathan had made for RIP Los Angeles as the cranky preservationist. People who weren't watching it and were just picking fights on Reddit were like, oh, they just are anti-development. I'm like, no, actually the best place in the world to develop a new high-rise apartment building is a vacant lot. But that doesn't mean you can just put anything up there.
Kim, that's absolutely perfect. Thank you so much. Before we go back in and roll up our sleeves and get into all this, Carolyn, there is a milestone. There's a deadline of April 29. Do you want to tell us why all of us on this side of the table are so interested in the date of April 29th and what's going to happen?
Well, it's so interesting because as I was saying earlier, when I first came across that notification, it was like almost the middle of January, and here we are, coming down to the final date, what it looks like to be, even though this project has been postponed for various reasons throughout this process of engaging in this process to save Normandy. The date coming up is next Wednesday, April 29th at 10 o'clock is the city council meeting in which this appeal will go before, and it will be decided if it is either supported or not supported.
Perfect. And so what is it exactly, the simple binary yes or no, what is it you're hoping for on the 29th from city council?
We're hoping that Herb Weston and CD10 will stand behind the process that we've gone through with Jameson Properties during especially this last month of meeting with them and trying to come up with a new design that would be supportive of the Hort Historic Street. And we are hoping that Herb Weston and CD10, when we finish this process, which we will this week with Jameson in our final meeting via virtual, given the COVID-19 stay at home. And we're hoping that depending on what they bring to the table, and if we find it to be supportive, that they'll either, that CD10 will support what we decide. And up to this point, we're really waiting for Jameson to come to the table with a design that we know that they're capable of doing and with a design that would honor Seek well. So we're going to wait and see what they bring to us on Friday. And so depending upon that meeting with Jameson, it will decide how we will need Herb Weston to stand beside his constituents who have been fighting for something which we think is relevant and is justified and is important to the history of our neighborhood, Koreatown, but more importantly, to the history of our city.
Is there anything that people listening to this podcast this week can do to help you sort of amplify your message?
Well, you know what you could do is you could go directly to the city clerk's website. You can go and find our case file, which is case file 87-.
No, Carolyn, we're gonna post all of this on the website.
Right.
Don't worry.
So you want people to send a letter and support you?
Yeah, we want people to go on the clerk's office and support what we're trying to do here.
Perfect.
And reach out to Herb Weston via email or go to the clerk's office and reach out to Herb Weston and say, this is important. We need to hold developers up to, you know, a par that they should be held up to, especially in an area and on a street that's a historic district. So, that's what we need. We need the support of our neighborhood and our city saying this is important. And we need it to be... We need it to be on the clerk's office site so they can see it on Wednesday.
Perfect. Okay.
April 29th.
Perfect. Nathan Marsak, I want you to take us literally by the hand and take us down this block, the 700 block of South Normandy between 7th and 8th, and take us and tell us about this amazing time capsule.
I will, Richard. Literally, for any of you out there listening, I will literally take you down the block. But if I'm not able to literally take you down the block, I would suggest you literally take yourself down the block, take a look at some of these. Here's the thing, you know, as an architectural historian, as an Angeleno, I have something of a romantic soul, as every Angeleno has, that's why I live here. And it's like time travel. It's so magnificent about this block. And As I think I said in the video, which you should watch, Jim, I'll post a link to it, you know, it's like if you go to Carroll Avenue or Heritage Square Museum, you know, you're in this arena of like vintage Victorian Los Angeles. And here you actually get to go out in the wild and walk around like interbellum, you know, between the wars, 1920s, 1930s, Los Angeles, totally untouched. And what's amazing about it is in 1949, there was a parapet work. Basically said that anything that could fall off on an earthquake had to be removed. And most owners, 99% of owners, said, like, to hell with that, I'm not going to go, like, get an engineer, like, figure out how to keep stuff from falling off. And they tore all the stuff off. But all of these buildings, all of them are completely intact, and it's totally amazing. So here's what I suggest you do. take some notes of what I'm about to say right now. Make sure you see like some of these things. I was going to take you building by building, but Kim said like we didn't have an hour for me to tell you about like every single architect and everything else they designed and everything like that. So here's some highlights. Go see the Barclay. Said like up at that top corner on the east side, 700-706. It's got these amazing like engaged plaster with mounted columns on it. The brickwork is fantastic. The chalfont down there at 720 by Milton Friedman has some of the best Beaux-Arts festoons. I mean, everyone loves festoons. The neon sign on that, and I wrote a little book called Los Angeles Neon, available at your local bookseller, which is now closed, so good luck to you. It's just the greatest neon sign in the world, and I only speak in absolutes, so I know that's true.
and we have photos of the chalfont neon that we'll post on the website.
And right here is where you're going to go look at the photo of the Stuart Hall, which is the one with the like 732, with the little defensible parapets and the little chateau-esque dormers and little witch hats on the sides. Go look at the Granada, which has this sort of, you know, that early 18th century Spanish Baroque chiracaresque elements to it. The Roosevelt Apartments, if you like Art Deco, and what Angelino doesn't like Art Deco, the Roosevelt Apartments by Max Maltzman, built in the fall of 1930, may be the greatest Art Deco building in all of Los Angeles. I'm saying a lot because Los Angeles is the greatest Art Deco city in the world. God bless New York, but and the Roselle Garage down at the corner by Richard D. King, who did like the Riviera, Red Wine Building, and Sparklets. I mean, that was built for the Ambassador Hotel.
Right.
So we had an entire Ambassador Hotel linkage there. Ambassador Hotel, you get to go look at that and say, like, oh, and it's got the application of ornament. You look at it and you think, oh, that's a big gray garage, but it's got this great application of ornament. You really have to go and walk this block a while and really, really soak it in. Some things are more nuanced than others. Some buildings have these things that pop out at you. Some really hit you over the head. If you go look at the Evelyn Ambassador, which is at 756, that's by Lewis A. Smith, who designed like 30 theaters across Southern California. That has these wonderful carved panels pressed into it. And they're carved into cast concrete, but they're magnificent. Like, those don't jump out at you right away, but something like the Anita Arms, designed by the great celebrity architect John B. Peterson, as the latest one on the block. It's 1939. That's done in this like sort of cool Regency late modern. Yeah. It's fluted plasters and this broken pediment with this urn on it. That is the coolest and most elegant building I think I've ever seen. Oh my God! This is this entire block, and it's like you've been thrust into this time machine, and you walk along it, and the wind rustles through the tree. And the trees are in bloom right now. It's just gorgeous. The idea that we can sacrifice this by putting in a giant Jenga tower of goofiness that looks like it was designed by some drunken 9-year-old. I mean, no, that's just cultural terrorism. And I won't have it.
Okay, perfect.
Not to mince words, but there you go. That's one.
And Nathan, it is the Stuart Hall building that the empty lot, which is the subject of the proposed development, the Stuart Hall sits just to the north.
The Stuart Hall is at 732 in a building called the Roxburgh by Glendale architect J.W. Morrison. That's at 746. And I think it's, I mean, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think 738 is therefore in the middle. And I think that was the building that was built in like 1948. And therefore, like, Office of Historic Resources said, well, 48 is a little bit out of that, like, between the wars thing, so we're going to allow it to be torn down. And it was torn down, what, in the 80s?
Okay, stop. You're perfect. You're exactly where I want you to be. Stephen Luffman.
Staring at the empty lot, saying, what's going to happen with the empty lot?
Yes.
And where's everyone going to park?
Okay.
Torn down in 2004.
Okay. Thank you. So, Stephen, there is an empty lot in CEQA. What's happening?
So, can I explain a little bit about CEQA?
Yes.
Let me just give it. So, in California, there's a law that says that environmentally sensitive areas have to follow certain rules to try to mitigate and the harm they're affecting if you're building there. So this includes stuff like tree frogs. It also includes historic districts. This is a historic district, as noted by the state, and so these developers have to follow certain rules and build in a certain way that doesn't harm this district. And the first proposal they had was, it was just an affront to what the law says. And since then, recently, thanks to Wesson's office, actually, they have worked with Carolyn and Spencer, and they have improved the project. They've improved it materially, whereas that they're now using better materials that are reflective of what's in this in the on the street. They have not made significant real improvements on the building, though. So if you want 100% building that fits in, they've made a building that fits in now. What they showed us a few weeks ago is 10%. And what we would like to do is move that needle a little further. And there are not we're not asking for huge changes. This building, it could be every bit as big as what they're proposing. We're not asking for what they would, with normal neighborhoods, ask for an increase in parking. We're not asking for that. All we're asking for is that it fits into the neighborhood. And there are certain things that they could do to make it fit in. One is that this building is 90 feet tall at the and all that height is at the very front of the building. It has an elevator shaft that's right on the front of the building that's 90 feet tall. Every other building on the block is a maximum of about 60 feet, 50 to 60 feet tall. So we're asking that they move back the sixth and seventh story so it's stepped well back from the front facade of the building. They haven't done that. The other thing we're asking for is that the building should be symmetrical. Every other building has a prominent entrance in the center of the building, left-right symmetry. Right now, the building has a very puny door that's on the north side of the building. That's right next to the elevator. We're also asking that the full front facade be flush with the what's called the streetscape, the street wall. And it is not that right now. They have a it has multiple areas where it jigs in and out, and that we also would like it to have no side yards. Every other building is building after building. There's no side yards right now. There's a 12-foot side yard on either side. I believe it's 12 feet for they're actually driveways for the parking. They could do this. They could put a facade that matches the buildings next to it. It would take actual thought and design that's beyond what so far they've shown. And I know it could be done. They actually did a very nice. They have a nice historic building that they built next to in Santa Monica, a theater there. They have the capabilities, the architect, but they don't seem to be willing to actually go to the length of doing serious redesign of this building. And I'm hopeful that with the help of the council office, that that Jameson will be convinced to do the necessary thing.
Perfect.
Well, you know, you're talking about having them do the step back pattern. And putting all of the height in the back, and I think you should push for an Art Deco ziggurat. This could be an incredibly outrageous structure if you can get like the right super young crazy person in the office to get excited about it.
Okay, Kim.
A ziggurat. There are great infill projects in historic districts around this country, and for some reason. Jameson thinks, because they own apparently half of Koreatown or 80% of it, they think that they could do whatever they want. Just put up any kind of mediocre building in this beautiful historic district.
And where did they get... So you're breaking up there, Spencer.
If it hasn't been said for the... Sorry. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, for those that haven't, you know, that's listening, one of the things that I think you want to visualize on this street, and I don't think we've said it yet, but it's a continuous unaltered chain of of buildings from the turn of the century, 1920 to 1930, let's just somewhere right in there. And I think that, you know, as we talk through this, you know, it sounds to me that we're just really nitpicking one particular building on one particular street. That's actually not what this is. This is an opportunity to preserve, I think, what is, you know, hundreds of years from now, perhaps a time capsule. Yeah. That we have an opportunity as a city to recognize is in front of us right now. And the minute that we come in on and develop something that's not fitting to the historical fabric of the street, that pretty much alters the street forever. So it's not like you would imagine, you know, as you put your eye, bird's eye view on Eastern Los Angeles, you know, a boxy new building here, an old Art Deco building there, and it's sort of kind of a mishmash throughout the city. This particular, by sheer maybe neglect or sheer luck, is standing unaltered for the last 100 years. So I think it's an opportunity to educate the city, educate our citizens, and be visionary and realize that if we can take a redesign seriously, we have a real opportunity here.
That's fantastic, Spencer. Stephen, I want to thank you. You did a great job setting up the CEQA appeal and what it is that's on the table. It's kind of boring, but of course, the devil is in the details, and this is all very important. And before the lights dim and the music swells and Carolyn and Spencer are back in the spotlight to bring us home for what it is they're hoping for, I just want to mention that in the course of these meetings, which Stephen, you've been doing a very good job of explaining these meetings with Jameson, also on your side of the table is Adrian Scott Fine, who's the director of advocacy for the Los Angeles Conservancy. It's a non-trivial position. And Donald Spivak, the former deputy director of policy and operations for the Community Redevelopment Agency of Los Angeles, who made a career of telling property owners, you have to do a better job. So you guys have a very, as we can tell from this interview of the people in it, you have a deep bench, but I hope I just showed with the other people at the table, not in this interview, what a deep bench your side, your campaign really has. And I'm very proud of all of you. So Kim, is there anything you want to say before we let Carolyn and Spencer have their aria, their bel canto?
Well, the one thing I want to say is that when the lights come on in Los Angeles again, and we can all go out and explore, I hope that you'll put the 700 South Block of Normandy on your list, because there's a lot of terrific food in the vicinity. It's a beautiful block to walk on. And as Nathan says, there's so many subtleties. You could really spend a long time on that block, especially if you come at the beginning of the day and see what the light is like, and then come a little later, especially if you get a chance to be there at the golden hour. I think that it has a great deal to offer. And as so many of these little byways in Southern California do, it's one of these places where you'll fall in love with it. And then once you love it, you'll fight for it, just like Carolyn and Spencer are.
Perfect. Okay. Carolyn and Spencer, we have done all this heavy lifting for you. We've put out what it is you're asking for, what we're looking for on this milestone date of April 29. Stephen's done a great job of explaining what this CEQA process you're looking for is doing and what you're trying to get at. So now we can drop the lingo, we can drop talking about attorneys, and the two of you just need to tell us why you should give a good goddamn about this block and this piece of land, which is and its proposal for the development on this parking lot.
Well, number one, I think Los Angeles is a badass city. And I think, honestly, we need to remind everyone what a badass city it is, and specifically the East Side. I think, like, a lot of my friends, I used to live in the Valley. A lot of my friends lived in the West Side. They don't come across La Brea that often, and they think of it as, like, sort of this sort of quote-unquote bad part of town you don't want to get caught at late at night, or they go to downtown maybe to see a Laker game. That's about it. But there's this artery that runs from downtown all the way to the ocean called Wilshire Boulevard. For many years, I was a proud rider of the subway, proud rider of the 720 Rapid to get where I need, riding up the bus. I've spent many a afternoon looking out the window along Wilshire Boulevard, also standing in traffic 5 o'clock coming backwards from Beverly Hills with a bus full of people that are literally immigrants, very diverse cultures, coming back into the belly of Los Angeles, which I believe is kind of around this area in Koreatown. Our neighbors, you know, have lived here since 1977 and raised their children, a lot of them from El Salvador or somewhere in Latin America. There's a fruit truck that sits on the street there every single night. There's dollar tacos. There's a carniceria on the corner. You can get your meat. Local Oaxaca restaurants down the street, pupusas, you name it. So there's this vibrancy that you will not find. That's just not duplicatable. It's so, I can't put another cliche name on it, but it's so authentic and it's so alive. And so to fight for the beauty of this city is something that I'm passionate about. I know Carolyn is, and I'll let her speak and end it here. But I just want to say thank you to you all, Richard, Kim, Stephen, Nathan, because honestly, just helping us get this word out, it was just us sitting in a room going, what do we do? And using social media, reaching out and finding, you know, I follow you guys on Facebook. You know, I love hearing about your John Fonte tours and all those cool things that you guys know, the Cranky Preservationists. Like, I didn't think there was somebody in the city that actually saw and did things about the things that I saw as much as you guys. So, like, the minute I reached out, there were so many details we didn't know. Uphill battle. Was this worth it? We're going to City Hall. We have no expertise or guidance. Carolyn has done, like, a saint's worth of work finding a way to keep this alive for both of us. But you guys have given us the expertise to keep going. You know, it's been on, the messaging has been consistent. We've been on the news with KTLA, this podcast, the Cranky Preservationist webisode, Spectrum. You guys have had a huge hand in that. So I just want to say, it's just been an absolute pleasure, you know, getting to know you guys and formulating a good, strong bond and relationship around Los Angeles with you. So hopefully you guys can hear how much I care, because I really do. And I hope that our councilman understands that as well. So thank you for having me on, and I'll give it to you, Carol.
Yeah, well, and Spencer, you're pretty much on the mark. I do have to say that I hope that Herb Wesson, our councilman in District 10, will stand behind us. I mean, even during this turbulent time where we can't really be in front of people, obviously the city's dealing with a lot of stuff that needs this, you know, more of a priority right now in this moment of COVID-19, but yeah, Normandy, it's something out of a dream. And it's right here in the middle of Los Angeles. And like Spencer said, for some reason, it has not been touched for almost 100 years. And we know how things come and go in Los Angeles now. You could have a piece of history destroyed in a moment. And unless there were people like yourselves, like Spencer said, in this city that are fighting to hold on to what make it so incredible. It's funny because Spencer had said that you can't duplicate this street. You can't duplicate it. And it made me think of our first meeting with Jameson. And this is before COVID-19 hit and we were on lockdown. It was our first meeting. And thank you, Herb Wesson and CD10, because they facilitated it. And we met at their office there on Western Avenue. And for the first time, we sat down with Jameson Properties and their representative, Alan Park. And we're right now explaining, as Spencer did so beautifully, the street to him. And he was like, his response was, Spencer, Carolyn, it's not a movie set. It's not a movie set.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because we said, but yes, it is.
It's literally a movie set for many, 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 many movies and commercials and, television shows.
I mean, it's just think here we are, the entertainment capital of the world, and Film LA grants more permits on that street than any other street in Los Angeles, and that's because it's our little New York. And to think without any hesitation or any oversight, or as Stephen has said, looking for the CEQA to protect such a vital street in our city, it was overlooked. And here we are today saying, no, we got to look at this, and we're going to protect this street, and we're going to protect our neighborhood, and we're going to have a little fun doing it. And so, yes, I never thought I would be in the mix of what we're doing right now, but I can say because of this, I feel more like a Los Angeles, Los Angeles resident.
Los Angelina?
A Los Angelino than I ever have in the 10 years that I've been here. So thank you, Normandy. Thank you, Normandy.
Perfect.
Well, you know what I said when I heard about how you got as far as you did, Carolyn, when you found out that Herb Wesson has a little cigarette problem and that he goes out at a certain time during city council meetings to suck down on that coffin nail, and you just went right up to him and you pitched him just like a lobbyist. You knew where he was going to be. He was all alone.
I did feel like a lobbyist, and I have to give credit to that because a friend of mine who... this is in the beginning of this, before I met you incredible people, Doug Haynes.
Oh, yeah.
Who is an avid member at the Hollywood City Council member.
Yeah.
Doug Haynes, somehow, he showed up with me on the eve before the CEQA exemption had to be in and helped my little, I had no idea what I was doing, to get this appeal. So, thank you, Doug Haynes.
La Mirada Neighborhood Association, that's right. Well, what I said when I heard about your little cigarette gimmick, I said, boy, if you'd been around when the ambassador was in trouble, we might have saved him.
Doug Hayes told me that. He said, Carolyn, he said, he'll get up in the middle or right in the beginning and he'll go to the side. He told me, you go to the right to get in the council. Going. He said, when you see him go up, it's like, wait. And I did that, and I dressed real pretty to look like I was a lawyer or something. So they let me go right back on the side, and I creeped up on Herb Wesson. I did a little creeper, and it worked fabulously. So, yeah.
No, but there's just been so many steps, so many emails, so many angles that we haven't thought about. You guys helping us bring in guys like Mr. Spivak and Mr. Adrian Scott Fine and Steven, and just... like, there's just so much to this, and kind of knowing, like, okay, where to spend our time because we have so much bandwidth, right? I mean, like, you know, nobody's paying us to fight this fight. So we all go to work. We all have our lives, and we're also still trying to, you know, go find time to go down at 11 o'clock in the morning on a Monday and start a protest, right, to grab attention. And all of that takes work. We sat in our apartment the night before writing up signs and coming together with the material that we wanted to, you know, bring to the attention of the councilman's office. So just like, this has been like a labor of love, but it's been incredible. I can't believe we're here, you know, and maybe Herb Wesson's going to take us seriously.
Herb Wesson, we need you. We need you. And Elizabeth Carlin, if you just happen to be listening, we need you even more. So please, we need CD10.
Okay.
Come on, CD10.
Perfect. Okay. Thoughts have wings. Okay. Thoughts have wings. We're gonna make this happen. All right. I want to thank all of you. We are going to put the 700 block of South Normandy to bed. Okay. Carolyn, Spencer, Stephen, good job. Nathan Marsak. Nathan, you and I have been friends for a very long time. You and Kim and I have been friends dating back to the mid-1980s. I cannot believe we are in a pandemic, and I cannot believe that Kim is about to set up the topic and the question she's going to put before you. But here we are, and I want you to bring this podcast episode home. So, Kim, let's take it away with you and your good friend, Nathan.
All right, Nathan, our entire lives together, when you've gotten a little loopy or you've just been in a good mood, you've sort of looked off into the distance and you've dreamed about the zombie apocalypse and what it would mean for the built environment and culture. And yet here we are. And so I thought we would ask you what it's like to actually live through your dream of the zombie apocalypse. Almost.
Almost, yeah. Well, you know, like Richard said, I can't believe we're in a pandemic. For me, I can't believe it, you know, taking this long. well, like people always say about the world, you know, like the Holocaust, like, I can't believe it happened. It's like, well, I can't believe it doesn't happen more often. But then that's just my take on humanity. But, you know, that's...
Okay, so stop. You brought up the Holocaust. So in memory of both your late parents, I want you to explain to the listeners at home what your mother said to your father when she proposed to him.
Oh, that's right. She said she was going to convert the Episcopalian that she was, because then that way, when the Nazis came back, they wouldn't be able to separate.
Thank you.
That was unfortunate this time. They didn't come back. They didn't show up in, you know, 1978, or did they? Anyway, Kim asked me to talk about life in the pandemic. It's a little ironic what I'm about to say after we just talked about Little New York. So I'm going to talk about a bit about New York and about density. But I want to talk about Los Angeles and density. You know, if you read my blog, RIP Los Angeles, link in the comments. I talk a lot about TOC and stuff like that, transit oriented. And I just wanted to say, sprawl, everyone hates sprawl. Sprawl, literally the worst thing in the world. Sprawl and suburbia and Pleasant Valley Sunday, and we all have to hate it because it's about conformity. Sprawl saves lives, people. You know, people came to Los Angeles to escape the dirty, diseased tenements of the East. Right. Well, actually, they came from Iowa in, you know, 1887 because of a rate war between the Southern Pacific. Okay, but let's just say that they came to escape the tenements with the typhus and the cholera and stuff like that. If you read the Tenement House Act of 1867 or the Tenement House Act of 1901, you know, these specifically went against real estate agents and boarding house keepers who were building too dense. It's the opposite of TOC today, because now the government, God bless it, are in league with the real estate developers, God bless them, to build dense. And I always said, and this goes back to like us being in college, like, and I always said, you know, what's going to happen? You're going to build too dense, and it's going to be an infectious disease, and it's going to go crazy. Now, New York City has 28,000 people per square mile, right? I'm making up numbers, but it could be right. and we have, I think, 8,000 people per square mile. So that's, what, one-fifth?
Yeah.
So their cheek by jowl density has given them 137,000 confirmed cases, and our much lesser density, we have 12,000 cases, which isn't even 10% of theirs. So there you go. So good work. And I wish we could have built denser earlier here, with more TOC, with more hive-like apartment buildings and packed subway trains and ever-widening circles of infection. Wow, that would have done us so good. So let's tear down the suburbs as quickly as we can and build these, you know, stack of Kleenex box apartment buildings nice and dense because of the children. Well, you won't be thinking of the children when they're all a bunch of foaming at the mouth zombies, you know, chewing through the door trying to eat your brain, will you? As is happening right now in Pacoima with COVID, or whatever they call it now, the corona business. No, I'm pretty sure there's brain chewing in there. I don't actually know.
You have to bring this in, Kim.
Nathan?
Yes, my dear.
I feel like we're back in college. It's wonderful. I hope you don't shoot me in the eye with a rubber dart again. I'm looking forward.
I'm not on nearly as much drugs. Just so funny.
These are different times. Soon we will be able to go outside again and we'll stand about 18 feet apart and I'll have a microphone on a stick and we'll make some more of these wonderful cranky preservationist videos. But while we can't do that, it's wonderful to reconnect with you and to talk about what it means to kind of sit back from wherever we're hiding out and look out the window and try to still be preservationists, because this activity is more important than it's ever been. The city, Eric Garcetti has released his state of the city and his provisional budget, and there's a lot of cuts happening, and I think we're all going to have to be ever more vigilant because the developers are not going to stop. As long as they're sitting on giant piles of money that they've made from density and Airbnb and all the nonsense, the Jamesons of the world still have money to spend, and they still want to grow it. And so, as you say, Spencer, this is a badass city. Angelenos working together, we can change things. We can actually make public policy work for us. And I'm looking forward to more and more of that in the future, especially when we can get out together and have some pupusas.
Exactly. Okay.
Can I hear Richard?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are we allowed to plug places?
Yes, yeah. Of course.
So remember, was it called like Sabores Oaxaqueños? Sabores
Oaxaqueños, yes.
Yeah, so when everybody out there goes down and checks out Normandy, literally with my hand in the flesh, there's this place on 8th, like I think just west of Arallo.
Yes.
Go there. Sabores Oaxaqueños is really good.
Yeah, the mole soup is tremendous.
Yeah.
Okay, so Nathan, we have your vision.
Oh, I also love.
I'm sorry, Spencer also has a recommendation.
I was going to say, across the street from on the other side of Arallo is Los Camales. And next time you guys come out, because I know we had a great meal. At the place you just said, but that place is awesome as well. So
I can't wait.
Perfect. Okay, Carolyn and Spencer, we know what your hopes and dreams are. We've been talking about them for about 45 minutes. Nathan, I'm happy that we're going to end this podcast with your vision of zombie children trying to eat your brain. I can't believe I've actually just said that. Stephen Luffman, you're my dear friend. I know we're all Angelinos, as we're stuck inside, we're on our own personal vision quests to understand what the better Los Angeles is going to be when the lights go on again. Stephen, I want you to send us home with your vision for what you want Los Angeles to be when the lights go on again.
Wow, that's loading a lot. I don't know if I, you know, I just wanted to still be here. I'm just afraid that our dear friend, the director of LACMA, might take his bulldozers and tear down a lot more. So hopefully it'll all be intact.
Godzilla govern.
Thank you. All right, well then, so Kim, we have nowhere else to go but to look to you to ask us to bring us home. I think we've really taken people around and up and down and back and forth, and I think we're good, mm-hmm. and we're clear, and we have faith, and we know everyone a little better. So why don't you bring us home?
Yeah, I'll just thank you for listening to our quarantine edition and direct you to the comments, which will have ways that you can send an email to the city to support the preservation of this incredible time capsule block, to see Nathan's video shot with Carolyn and Spencer exploring the block, and links to Stephen's preservation projects and his website that Richard pestered him to set up so that all of his projects can be in one place. And generally, stay connected, because the most powerful thing that we have as Angelinos is the fact that we're really angry and we love the city. And when you combine those two things together, I truly believe we can change things. There's an election coming up in November and the FBI's in town. Half of City Hall could be gone. Imagine what we could do with people who actually want to make us happy. That's what I'm dreaming of. That's my future, LA. Politicians that want to make us happy.
Kim, thank you. Stephen, thank you. Nathan, thank you. Spencer, thank you. Carolyn, thank you. This is the 134th episode of You Can't Eat the Sunshine for the week of April 20th, 2020. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. Thank you to all of my guests for your time and attention. God bless you. Thank you.